Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court? My name is Hillary Ross, registration number 42215, and I represent the appellants Christopher and Carolyn McNerney in this matter. This case raises the issue of the proper interpretation of CRS section 193507, subsection 5A, which provides a mechanism for intervention as a matter of right in dependency and neglect proceedings post-adjudication. In this case, Mr. and Mrs. McNerney are the maternal grandfather and step-grandmother of this minor child, and they sought to intervene under section 193507 in February of this year. Their motion was denied by the trial court. However, the decision of the trial court should be reversed because 193507 grants appellants as grandparents the right to intervene as a matter of right. Section 193507, subsection 5A states, quote, parents, grandparents, relatives, or foster parents who have the child in their care for more than 3 months, who have information or knowledge concerning the care and protection of the child, may intervene as a matter of right following adjudication. As the position of the court and guardian ad litem in the county in this case attest, this language is susceptible to two different interpretations. One is that all of these enumerated parties, parents, grandparents, relatives, and foster parents, are required to have a child in their care for more than 3 months in order to be eligible to intervene under the statute. The other potential interpretation is that only foster parents seeking to intervene must have the child in their care and meet this 3 month requirement. Applying the 3 month requirement just to foster parents makes sense. Courts have consistently drawn a distinction between family on one hand and foster families on the other. For example, in People in the Interest of AC, this court noted that foster parents have a relationship with a child that is a creature of the state. It's a creature of law and of contract, whereas family has a relationship with a child that is entirely apart from the power of the state. Since part of the reason that a party would want to intervene is to give information to the court, family would necessarily have information whether or not they've ever had custody or care of a child, information like family history or family dynamics, information about family medical history, or even information about other relatives within the family. Foster parents, on the other hand, are complete strangers to the child until they've had the child in their care for a significant amount of time, at which point they would also have information that would be helpful to a court in determining issues post-adjudication. Where a statute is ambiguous, such as this one, CRS section 24203 provides a court with a series of factors that can be used to determine the meaning of the statute. These include legislative history, laws on similar subjects, and the consequences of a particular interpretation. When these factors are applied to the language of section 193507, they weigh in favor of interpreting the 3 month requirement only to apply to foster parents. In People in the Interest of LH, this court analyzed in detail the legislative history of section 193507, subsection 5A. And in that opinion, the court noted that the statute came about as a result of the Colorado Foster Parents' Rights and Responsibilities Task Force recommendations to establish a mechanism for foster parents to be able to be considered a party in a dependency and neglect matter. On the other hand, courts had previously held that family could intervene as a matter of right. For example, in People in the Interest of MDCM, this court drew a distinction between potential intervening parties who, because of their relationship or their knowledge relating to a child, would have information that would be parties such as foster parents or even potentially psychological parents, and on the other hand, relatives who are, quote, entitled as a matter of right to intervene. This is also consistent with the reading of the Children's Code as a whole. Section 19.1.102 states specifically that it's a goal of the Children's Code to preserve and strengthen family ties whenever possible. Section 19.3605 also expresses a preference for relatives in seeking placement of a child post-termination of parental rights. Section 19.1.117 likewise provides for a mechanism for grandparents to seek visitation with their grandchild. I think most importantly here, Your Honors, is the potential consequences of the interpretation of requiring the 3 month requirement to apply to parents, grandparents, and relatives. Hypothetically, if there was a father who was serving in the military overseas and he had never cared for his child through no fault of his own, If there was a dependency and neglect petition filed, and for whatever reason he wasn't named, oftentimes mothers refuse to name the father, and were he to be named as a John Doe, then under this interpretation, he could not intervene into a dependency and neglect matter relating to his own child. Clearly, the legislature and the Children's Code as a whole contemplates parents participating in dependency and neglect proceedings throughout the entire proceeding. And clearly, the legislature thought that the parents needed to have a mechanism to intervene, or they would not have included them. In other words, we can't just consider the parents' language to be superfluous. Legislation meant to include parents as a potential intervening party, and because application of this statute to parents would lead to an absurd result, it makes more sense to read the three-month requirement as only applying to foster parents. Lastly, the Guardian of Love in the county contend that this is not a final appealable order. In Fagan versus Alexa Group Limited, which was cited by the county, the Colorado Supreme Court held that the denial of a motion to intervene as a matter of a right is a final and appealable order. Rule of Civil Procedure, Rule 24, states that the party may intervene as a matter of right if this right is conferred by statute. Section 19.3507, by its very terms, confers intervention as a matter of right, and therefore this is a final and appealable order. I'd like to reserve the remainder of my time for rebuttal.
Thank you, Council.
Thank you.
Not sure exactly how much time you have left.
8:54.
Okay.
Thanks. Good afternoon. My name is Jennifer Mullenbeck, attorney registration number 37303. I represent the Jefferson County Division of Children, Youth, and Families, both in this hearing and at the trial court level. May it please the court, we shouldn't even be here today. This appeal is improperly before this court because a final order has not been entered regarding the maternal grandparents at the trial court level. We shouldn't even be here today because the maternal grandparents do not meet the statutory requirements for intervention as outlined in CRS 19.3507, subsections 5A. The GAO, Catherine Madsen, and I are aligned in this matter, and I plan to use approximately 10 minutes of the time while I will give the rest to her. Let's start with the final order analysis. First, what we need to do is look to the Children's Code because they define what a final order is for purposes of appeal. 19.1.109, subsections 2B and 2C, say that orders that either deny or approve the termination of parental rights or orders that adjudicate a child to be dependent or neglected after entry of disposition. We know that the Colorado Appellate Rule 3.4 extends that slightly to include permanent custody orders that are entered pursuant to the Permanency Planning Statute 19.3702.
Also, if we accept your opponent's interpretation of the statute, wouldn't that give the grandparents a right conferred by statute to intervene, and wouldn't that in turn make it a final appealable order?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I think it has been the tradition of this court that when the court finds that it is not a final order in a dependency and neglect case, that the appeal is dismissed, that the court has found that they don't have jurisdiction to consider the appeal. And I believe that's what would need to happen today, because this is not a final order under the Children's Code.
Well, where someone is asserting a right to intervene as a matter of right, isn't that a final appealable order under the Supreme Court's Fagan case?
I believe that's distinguishable from this case, and here's why I believe that. Under Fagan, what it says is that when a party intervenes under Colorado Civil Rule of Procedure 24A, then it is a final order for appeal. But I don't believe that's applicable here. And the reason is that the Colorado Children's Code has limited the applicability of the Colorado Civil Rules of Procedure in a number of ways. They've done it in terms of shortened timelines for judicial review, they've done it for allowing admissibility of hearsay in certain proceedings, and they've done it in this case. The Children's Code has defined what a final order is. Additionally, if you look to people in the interest of MDCM, a 1974 opinion from the Court of Appeals, they expressly rejected the use of 24A as the rule to be used to determine intervention in dependency and neglect cases. They held that while there was no definition in the Children's Code at that time, that those having custodial experience and knowledge should be allowed to intervene.
Mullenbeck, the statutes that you referenced that talk about what is a final order under the Children's Code?
Yes.
Can those be read to designate orders that are final, but not to encompass the whole universe of final orders?
I think that's possible. I think case law has done that in terms of dependency neglect cases. People in the interest of, if I could just have one moment.
Well, if those statutes don't necessarily determine the limits, the whole universe of final orders for dependency and neglect proceedings, how come this isn't a final order outside those two statutes that you referenced?
Because I believe that the case law has also defined what it is, that they've extended it, but not to any order that's entered as a final order. People in the interest of HR, which is a 94 decision from the Court of Appeals, says that an appealable order in a dependency neglect case is one that ends a particular action, leaving nothing further to be done to determine the rights of the involved parties completely. In this specific case, the grandparents' rights have not been completely determined. That there, in this case, there's been no final determination regarding a termination of parental rights, there's been no change in permanent custody, and there's been no entry of a final order regarding custody. In fact, the trial court said in its order from March 12th of 2012, it said this court will not consider placement options for OC at this time. After the termination of parental rights hearing, should parental rights be terminated, the court will set the matter for contested placement hearing.
Well, isn't it arguably too late to hear an appeal after that all that water's gone over the dam? If we were to determine based on a final appealable order, say later down the road, okay, after termination, that grandparents actually did have standing and should have been allowed to intervene, then couldn't it undo a lot of what has gone on in the interim, and shouldn't their input have been sought on the termination piece?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. I don't believe that relatives, or even if they were foster parents intervening, have standing at this time to participate in a termination of parental rights hearing. I think if the court...
Even if they had custody for the requisite amount of time, they still couldn't be allowed in?
I want to say that they couldn't participate in the proceedings. They would certainly be entitled to provide information to the court. But I don't believe that being allowed to intervene, whether it was pre-termination or post-termination in this case, would change the grandparents' rights in any way.
So your view of the statutory right to intervene is a matter of right in situations where everyone has the requisite 3 months of custody is limited to only advising the court?
I'm sorry, can you ask that
okay.
again?
When the statute, let's just assume to get the ambiguity out of the statute that the relative or the foster parent has the requisite 3 months.
Yes.
Your view of intervention is only to advise the court?
No. I believe it's to provide information to the court based on the prior case law in terms of when there is a termination of parental rights, that the court, this court has held that they do not have full participation in the proceeding because it is related strictly to the parents' rights. And so I do believe that that would be the case here.
Interesting that the whole notion of intervention is different in a dependency and neglect from a regular intervention.
Yes, I think it's been limited by case law. Let's look at the issue of statutory construction. As this court is aware, when we look at statutory construction, we first need to look at the plain language of the statute. We look at the words, we read them in context, and we read them according to their plain and ordinary meanings. The plain language of this statute tells us two things. It tells us, one, who can intervene, and two, it tells us the circumstances under which they can intervene. The statute does not divide blood relatives into a separate category or a separate sentence than the foster parents. All of the persons listed are within the same sentence and are to be held to the same standard. If this court does believe that the language is ambiguous, I think the same result would be achieved using those extrinsic modes of statutory construction. As Ms. Ross stated, that you can look to the legislative history and laws of same or similar subjects. I think if we look at similar statutes, the one that makes the most sense to consider is 1903-5075 and move down to subsections B and C. Subsection B states, a county department of social services that placed a child in foster care shall provide the foster parent of the child, any pre-adoptive parent or relative, providing care for the child with notice of any administrative review of the child's case. Section C, in relevant part, tells us upon the written request of the foster parent, pre-adoptive parent, or relative, notice of the court hearing for the child's case shall be provided, and then it tells them how to provide that. When you read all three subsections together, A, B, and C, we see that the common denominator here in terms of the right to intervene and the right to have notice are limited to those persons who are providing care for the child. The fact that the words foster parent in section A follows the word or doesn't mean that the three-month requirement only applies to foster parents. If we applied that analysis to sections B and C, we would come up with an absurd result. What it would say is in subsection B that the relative would be the only person required to have the child in their care in order to receive notice, not the foster parent, not the pre-adoptive parent, and that the relatives would only be entitled to notice if they were caring for the child, which is the exact opposite what's being advocated by Ms. Ross. It doesn't make sense to allow them to intervene as a matter of right without having the child in their care, but then in the next two sentences, sections B and C, to require them to have the child in their care to be given notice of the proceedings.
Well, and your reading would require even a parent to have had the child in the custody for the requisite amount of time. Why does that make any sense at all?
Well, I'd like to talk about that piece, and I will admit that this is...
How can you get around Troxell versus Granville?
And this piece is puzzling. I think this is something we spent a lot of time discussing and reviewing.
That was my question exactly.
So I reviewed the legislative history of House Bill 1322. And in listening to those proceedings, at that point, we need to remember that the statute didn't include the limiting language of having the child in their care for 3 months or more. It was just the parties who could intervene if they had knowledge. At that point, there was a representative who offered an amendment which was accepted to add a parent to the list of individuals. The representative said that he wanted to ensure that parents who had lost custody or had voluntarily given up custody to a relative would be allowed to participate. I think this was in response to a testimony of a county attorney who did testify that under 19.3.5025, this county attorney actually has discretion in terms of parents to name. You only have to name the parent who has been alleged to have committed the abuse or neglect.
Right, you don't have to name the other parent, but why don't they have a right to intervene whether they've had custody of the child or not?
Right, and in all practicality, the county attorney does name all parties for the exact reasons that the court raised, because they have constitutional
rights. But assume that they didn't. Why shouldn't we construe the statute to let a parent have standing as an intervener regardless of whether the parent has ever had custody of the child? To do otherwise, wouldn't that violate Troxell versus Granville?
And I believe that a parent may have...
I don't think you put constitutional rights in the discretion of the county attorney.
Absolutely not, and I agree with that. And I think that's why, as a practical matter, the parents are always named. And so
that doesn't solve the problem, counsel.
No, it doesn't. And that's the difficulty with this statute, that one piece doesn't fit with what the other parts of the legislative history tell us. And so that is my only way to sort of reconcile this, is that language was added before the requirement of having the child in their custody was there.
Well, there was also a Colorado Court of Appeals case from 1974, People in the Interest of CP, before this statute was enacted, that said that where the division concluded that the grandparent had to be permitted to participate in dispositional proceedings if they made timely application for custody before the dispositional hearing.
Yes.
And we have to presume that the legislature was aware of this law when it enacted the statute. It doesn't seem to have overruled it in any way by implication or disapproved it. Aren't we supposed to take that into consideration in considering whether a grandparent is included under the statute?
Yes, and I do believe that we are required to do that, and I think that this case is distinguishable from CP. And the way I get there is if we look at People in the Interest of MDCM, which just followed the CP decision by about a week in 1974. What they said in MDCM is that we have previously ruled in a situation such as this that relatives are entitled as a matter of right to intervene. My belief is that this statement was not a blanket statement that relatives are always entitled to intervene as a matter of right, but in a situation where the caregiver, which in CP was a grandmother who was claiming that she had been previously appointed the guardian of the children, or whether it be a foster parent, as in MDCM, that is what entitles that relative to intervene as a matter of right. The persons with, and I quote, custodial experience and sufficient interest, knowledge, and concern are entitled to intervene as a matter of right. So I don't believe that CP was a blanket statement that all relatives can, but in a situation where they had had custody and were denied the child being placed with them or being placed back with them, that entitled them to intervene as a matter of right.
As I recall, having custody was only in the MDCM case for foster parents and not in the CP case for grandparents. Did I miss something?
And my understanding in reading that is that the grandmother in CP was claiming that she had previously been given legal custody of the children through a Denver juvenile court case, and this was now in an Adams County court. So it wasn't that the children were necessarily in her physical custody, but she was claiming she had been the custodian and that the child should be, I think her words were, returned to her, but I don't know that they were physically in her custody. So in conclusion, what I would state is that the maternal grandparents, they simply don't meet the requirements outlined in CRS 19-3507A. They haven't cared for the child OC for more than 3 months. In fact, the child OC has never been placed with them. There's been no final order entered regarding the permanent custody of the child OC, and that they do not have a right to intervene in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Tuttle? Counsel, before we turn your clock on, I would like to have you respond to the concerns that were raised by your opposing counsel with respect to whether the Children's Code provisions on standing to intervene, how you would interpret those, how you would respond to your opposing counsel. Go ahead and turn the clock on.
Yes, Your Honor. With respect to the specific instances that create an appealable order within the dependency and neglect context, as this court pointed out, it's a list, but it's not an exhaustive list. And in addition, as the county points out, case law has consistently made inroads into what would be considered an appealable order. Rule 24 is very clear that Rule 24 is very clear because it states that if a statute confers the right to intervene as a matter of right, then you can intervene as a matter of right. The Supreme Court's holding is very clear. It states that a motion denying intervention as a matter of right is a final order. It's a final appealable order. At its heart, dependency and neglect proceedings are civil litigation. Rule 24 is equally applicable in that it states that if you can intervene as a matter of right pursuant to a statute, then that is an appealable order.
So help me out here. Do we have to decide first whether grandparents have a right to intervene before we decide whether there's a final appealable order?
No, Your Honor. I respectfully submit that the county is putting the cart before the horse. The grandparents are seeking to intervene as a matter of right. The statute states that intervention is as a matter of right. If this court were to accept the county and the GAL's interpretation of the statute, then perhaps it's not a final and appealable order, but it depends. But it is a final and appealable order because the mechanism by which they sought to intervene provides for intervention as a matter of right. With respect to statutory construction,
I'm not sure that isn't backwards, counsel.
Qualify under the statute.
Correct, Your Honor. If they qualify under the statute, then they are intervening as a matter of right. If they don't qualify under the statute, then they don't qualify to intervene at all. And so whether it's a final and appealable order is neither here nor there because they don't qualify as a potential intervener as a matter of right.
Well, except it's not neither here nor there if we don't have jurisdiction for the appeal. So it sounds to me like what you're saying is we have to first decide whether grandparents are have a right to intervene under the intervention statute before we determine whether they whether we have jurisdiction.
Your Honor, I believe what settles the decision is that the statute provides for intervention only as a matter of right. It doesn't provide for intervention any other way. So therefore, any denial of an order relating to intervention as a matter of right under the statute is going to be a final and appealable order. Now, if this court were to determine that my clients were not able to intervene because they didn't meet the requirements of the statute, the fact remains that they sought to intervene as a matter of right. Therefore, that order is appealable.
So you're saying the jurisdiction isn't controlled by the merits of the statute, right?
That's correct, Your Honor, because the statute itself is completely clear that intervention is to be brought as a matter of right. So if, for instance, they were appealing an order that they couldn't intervene as a matter of right because they weren't relatives, then it still means that they are they are appealing an order relating to intervention as a matter of right, and therefore it's a final order.
So whether the question they qualify as a relative or not would be the merits, but it wouldn't control the jurisdictional issue.
Correct, Your Honor. With respect to the statutory construction, the county brought up CRS section 19.3507, which, as the county pointed out, provides for who gets notice of hearings or who has an opportunity to be heard at those hearings. However, that statute also specifically states that no person shall be considered a party based upon being given notice under the statute or by being given an opportunity to be heard. So I would submit that this statute is not controlling of how 19.3507 should be interpreted, because it specifically states that it has nothing to do with whether or not someone is a party, whether or not they are allowed to be given notice and an opportunity to be heard at a hearing. As this court pointed out, we cannot presume that the legislature didn't intend to give full effect to every piece of language within the statute. Parents are included. It doesn't make sense for parents to have had the child in their care for 3 months in order to be able to intervene in a matter relating to their own child. I request that this court give meaning to the entirety of the statute. Therefore, we request that the court reverse the lower court's holding that the grandparents were not able to intervene. Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel, for your briefs and your arguments. We appreciate your participation today. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.